Pre-recorded, completely unscripted, and about as organised as the thought processes of some members of the Australian Senate, you're listening to news, views and opinions on events from here at home and around the globe on politics, business and society in general. This is the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove.
Welcome back, dear listener, and thank you, Scott, for that introduction. In fact, dear listener, that's all you'll hear from Scott in episode 55, because he's busy with something else, and we've got the 12th man has come in as his replacement. Welcome back, Paul.
Hi, Trevor. Thanks for having me back. Hi, listeners.
So we've got the 12th man filling in, and I'm confident we'll produce a half-decent show for you. So
let's give it a shot. A
few different things have happened this week, 12th man, and one of the biggest would be the Sonia Kruger brouhaha.
That's one way of putting it.
So just most people would be aware of what was said or whatever, but the thing I would like to focus on, well, she basically said she was scared of the situation with Muslims and basically said she was in favour of the Pauline Hanson policy of stopping Muslim integration, effectively. And Walid Ali went on and gave one of his editorials, and I've got a bit of an issue with it. He came out and said that Sonia Kruger isn't evil, and calling on people to stop the cycle of outrage. And well, he started off with a tactic that I didn't like, 12th man. He said, I could sit here and pull apart Sonia Kruger's statement. I could point out that Japan has had its share of terror attacks, and the UN has attributed Japan's low crime rate to low inequality and low gun ownership. I could point out that if Sonia is afraid, logically, as a woman in Australia, she has a much higher chance of being murdered by a man she knows than a Muslim from another country. Blah, blah, blah. It's like me saying, well, Paul, I could point out that you've got a really ugly nose.
Thank you. I won't.
And I could point out that that's a terrible shirt you're wearing. But
I like this shirt.
But I won't. Like, really? Just the opening just line got me. But in the end, okay, he's sort of made a general point after that, okay, she's scared. Rather than let's being destructive and tearing her down, let's try and be constructive in our debate, which is a good sentiment. But in being constructive, he's saying, let's look at what motivates Sonia Kruger. And really, I'd prefer he'd done what he said he wouldn't do. Like, I would like him to address the arguments. Like, his initial things about Japan having its share of terror attacks. Well, is that true or not true?
I don't think so. On a global scale, Japan is a relatively peaceful and crime-free society. They do have them, and obviously the one yesterday was a case in point. But they're usually mentally disturbed people, from my experience. Yeah. They're usually people who have some sort of grudge. They're mentally disturbed. They're alienated individuals who lash out, and they almost invariably lash out with a knife or, you know, something that at their disposal. They don't go out and buy an AK-47 or, you know, make bombs.
So I would have preferred that he said the things that he said he wouldn't say, and that those facts and arguments get examined as to whether they're true or not. But in the end, he talked about, you know, the truth is what motivates them is fear, you know, the likes of Sonia Kruger. And fear is one thing we all share.
Really?
That's very presumptuous. Like, I'd just prefer that he looked at the facts and the arguments and put forward a rational thesis. Like, I'd be happy with that. Indeed. So, yeah.
He was coming across as Mr. Reasonable and Mr. Conciliatory.
Yeah, but it's like a typical Q&A panel of never addressing the issue. Like,
yeah, that's a bit harsh on Q&A.
Well, it's to me, it's all a bit of, let's all sit around the campfire, hold hands and sing Kumbaya and everything will be okay.
I think that was where Walid was coming from, but I think that's a bit unfair on Q&A. I don't think the idea of Q&A is to solve problems, but just to give them a public airing. And I think it does that reasonably well most of the time.
Yeah, maybe that's what frustrates me, because all the problems are just thrown up in the air and there's no solving at all.
Yeah, but there is some value in that, in just airing them, because, you know, the problem with some problems is people are afraid to talk about them because they endure public censure, you know. The political correctness problem. And, you know, well, it is pretty politically correct, I would say, in most respects. So what was his strategy? We all know Waleed is a practicing Muslim, or at least he claims to be. And I'm always surprised that such an intelligent bloke, and he is very intelligent and, you know, well-educated, no doubt about it. I'm always surprised when a person like him is a practicing religious person, because he would have the intelligence to assess the, you know, mountain range of evidence there is that undermines the God hypothesis. And yet he doesn't want to go there. And that's where my respect of him sort of comes to a stop, because he has the wherewithal to delve into the whole religious issue and pull it apart. He just won't go there. I think it's a psychological issue, and I think it is for just about everybody.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's not alone in that regard. I put him in the Muslim light category.
Muslim light, yeah.
Yeah, so I got into trouble with Scott last week when I did the categorization.
I heard that. Yeah.
So Walid Ali, put him above, you know, more serious than a social Muslim, and certainly less serious than a by-the-book Muslim. So he goes down as a Muslim light, I think.
Yeah, but the problem, I think you'd agree, Trevor, is that there's something essentially wrong with Islam. And you can have all the nice Muslims in the world. And, you know, we generally agree that most Muslims are decent, you know, law-abiding people who just want to get on with their lives. The problem being, when you get radicalization, as they term it, of young men usually, but, you know, also young women sometimes, when they have a grievance or a grudge against society and they want to lash out, you know, what do young Tibetans do? They self-immolate. They burn themselves to death. They destroy themselves. You know, what do young Italians do? Because, you know, unemployment in countries like Greece and Italy and Spain are through the roof, particularly for young people. I don't have the figures, but they're very high. I think they're well over 20% for young people, unemployment.
Oh, youth unemployment in Italy and Spain, that's like in the 30s.
Yeah, it's sky high. Yeah. But what do they do? Do they blow up a train? You know, do they bomb the Vatican? Do they do anything and engage in acts of mass violence against innocents? It just doesn't happen. So, as I see it, the problem is when these people become disaffected, they look for an avenue to express their disaffection. And if Islam is, you know, obviously available to them being members of the Muslim community, and they look into it and they get inspiration from it, that's dangerous.
Because unfortunately, a perfectly legitimate reading of the books of Islam can lead you to that.
It certainly that conclusion. Can. And yeah. As we're seeing on an increasingly daily occurrence, almost it's happening, and it's disturbing. And is it any wonder that Sonia Kruger and thousands? Let's face it. How many people voted for One Nation? Something like 400,000, 500,000.
In the Senate in Queensland, 150,000.
Yeah, I think Australia wide it was in the at least 400,000 voted.
It would be.
A lot of people are concerned about this issue. And for people to keep trying to pretend it has no relation to the Islamic religion is just not credible.
Yeah, but she's such an awful advocate for that side of the argument. She's such a terrible advocate.
She's not well informed.
No.
She's a clumsy speaker.
And she paints the brush across everybody when, as I've sort of tried to point out, you need to start segregating groups and saying, well, of course, there's an enormous number who are fine. So It's the problem. So
it is the problem. But I would I would caution people against just these labelling of people as bigots and racists. I don't think that's constructive.
Well, you alerted me, 12th Man, to at least one article, and I found another one where the writers of the articles were saying, it's just a clever use of words to say that this isn't racism because Islam is not a race, and it is racism. Basically.
The writer was just basically saying it is because I say it is.
Yes. Yes. So I'll read a little bit from these articles. A lot of people in Australia seem to think it is tremendously clever to say that you cannot be racist against Muslims because Islam is not a race, it's a religion. It goes on to say, what a load of codswallop. You can't be racist against Italians because Italians aren't a race, they are a nationality. If only it was simply a matter of race as something that does or doesn't exist, but it isn't. Racism is how we think of ourselves and others. So that was one article. And another on the same lines. Islam is not a race is a cop-out. Call it racism, call it prejudice, call it bigotry, it's still discrimination, says the writer. And race can be cultural rather than ethnic.
Well, now he's stretching the definition of racism beyond recognition, isn't he?
I think so. Oh, you clearly don't love the English language.
So if I have an intense dislike of rugby or of football in general, am I a racist?
Well,
apparently so, according to that definition.
If the issue is hot enough, maybe you are. But so we need to look at definition. Like, I just think it's like saying, I really want to use the word racist. I really want to use it in this context.
And we know why we want to use it.
Bugger you, I'm going to use it anyway.
That's right.
Because it's the nastiest word and it'll shut you down.
It's a shutdown argument, isn't it?
When there's a perfectly good word to use in its place, 12th Man. So, quick Google of some definitions. Racism. The belief that all members of each race possess characteristics, abilities, or qualities specific to that race, especially so as to distinguish it as inferior or superior to another race or races. That's racism.
That sounds pretty reasonable definition to me.
Yeah. Here's what the word that should be used. Dislike or prejudice against people from other countries. That's the sort of meaning that these people are wanting, isn't it? The word for that is xenophobia.
That's right.
So just stop using the word racist and use the word xenophobia and problem solved.
Although if they're already in your country,
yes,
xenophobia might be a little bit of a bad fit.
Dislike or prejudice against people from other countries. Mm. Okay, second generation doesn't apply, perhaps.
But look, if you disliked Australian Indigenous people, for example, you couldn't use xenophobia as a definition for that.
That's true. That's true. You could use racism for that.
Yes, we could use good old racism.
So,
yeah, okay.
I think the words work. your other options. Bigotry. So, intolerance towards those who hold different opinions from oneself. Mm. So, that's one you can... Different opinions.
Well, it's intolerance.
Yes.
So it doesn't mean you necessarily...
That's right. It's more than disagreement.
It's more than disagreement. Yes. Stronger than disagreement.
So you and I would disagree with many religious groups holding different opinions from oneself, but we're not intolerant.
We're always happy to engage them in conversation. In fact, let's face it, we would welcome them into our political party if they were willing to join with us in a common cause of making Australian society absolutely equal for everybody, that we would welcome them.
Of course, we would.
So we're not bigots on that level.
No. One other word that could be used in this sort of thing is prejudice, preconceived opinion that is not based on reason or actual experience. So Pauline Hanson could be accused of prejudice.
Yeah.
Not based on reason or actual experience, so particularly when she's painting a whole group. So the two articles where they've basically said stop wheedling your way out of the racist allegation just because Islam is not a race, I say to those people, well, just use the word xenophobia and move on. It doesn't. It's not as nasty. A lot of people don't understand it.
Although xenophobia has become a bit of a...
People know it's bad, but they don't know exactly
what it means.
Yeah, to tell you the truth, I probably couldn't have given a half-decent definition without having Googled it before this podcast.
I'm confident you could have.
Thank you, 12th Man. So there we go. Racism. I mean, we were talking earlier, before the podcast, about laws that are specifically in relation to Aboriginals.
Yeah.
And favourable or unfavourable, that is a racist law.
It is. And remember the intervention, going back several years now, the intervention in Northern Territory in response to allegations of widespread child abuse and domestic violence, I think, was the other thing. But, you know, you recall the intervention. The Commonwealth government went into Aboriginal communities, and there was certain laws were suspended from the Racial Discrimination Act. And a lot of people, in particular members of the Aboriginal community at the time, claimed it was racism to suspend those laws. And I agreed with them.
I think that, you know, people who just aren't happy with the... You want to be able to use the word racist, even when it doesn't apply, or just wrong and showing a lack of respect for the beautiful English language that's got words there, if you care to use them.
Indeed.
The Iron Fist, the Velvet Glove, and the 12th Man are all members of the Secular Party. There may be other contributors to the show who are also members. That does not mean that every opinion given on this show is policy of the Secular Party. To find out what is policy, go to the website of the Secular Party. And while you're there, think about joining and signing up, because we need more secularists in this world. Thanks. Oh, now, you wouldn't have heard about this one, 12th Man, I don't think. But an article I came across today. We've done previously a little mention about divining rods with people. There was one of the state governments wasted $30,000 or something on water divining
to try and... You're joking.
No.
But $30,000 water divining?
On a water diviner, yes. Oh, but that's been outdone by the Iraqi government that spent $60 million...
On bomb detection devices?
Correct. That were nothing more than water divining type devices.
Yeah. Totally bogus, weren't they?
Totally bogus.
It was a total scam by some... Was he British?
British.
Businessman?
Yes.
And he took them for how much? 60 million?
60 million. Gosh. He sold them 1,500 divining rods. They're basically just bits of metal with a little... Kind of like a... Oh, not a gun, but a little handheld instrument with a bit of wire sticking out of it. Like, it's the most pathetic-looking device. And... He sold them to the Iraqi government as bomb detection devices. And they continued to spend money on those devices even after this British con man was convicted of fraud. And what has now happened is that there was a suicide bombing that killed 300 people earlier this month. And the reason that people died was because they were using these bogus detectors.
Is that really?
Yes. Oh. So the Prime Minister has finally banned these worthless devices.
Oh, my goodness.
But in some places, they are still being used.
No.
And they are just having a hard time getting rid of them. So
how would they have a hard time getting rid of rubbish?
Well, because these people don't understand. They just think that they're told... that they're magical bomb-detecting devices. They have no idea of what to expect, and they think, oh, well, I'll use that.
So do you think it's linked to the whole magical thinking issue?
Could be. Who knows? Who knows? Like, if you're not well-educated, you would perhaps have no idea that a bomb detection device has probably got to be a bit more substantial than a 1 kilo piece of metal with a bit of wire sticking out of the end of it. Like, you wouldn't know.
It sounds a bit like the devices the Scientology people use to do their psychological analyses, doesn't it? You know, they hold these two tubes with wires connected to some device behind the operator's desk.
Yes, it's quite a substantial box that's gone through various iterations.
Oh, you've done the training?
No, I've listened to a podcast about it, actually. Actually, if you're interested in that, dear listener, there's a podcast called Oh No, Ross and Carrie. Oh. And they explore supernatural or other things like religions so that you don't have to. And they often, you know, they'll go and join the Mormons, for example, and they'll do a whole series of their experience. And they did that with Church of Scientology. Really, really, really good podcasts. Yeah. I highly recommend.
I've read one book by an ex-member of Scientology, and that was a pretty good description of what goes on.
Mm.
And, of course, there was that good documentary recently, a few months ago.
Haven't seen it.
No, you should. Going Clear.
Yes.
Yes, you should see it, Trevor. Mm. Very interesting.
Mm.
And you listeners should see it as well.
Mm. Where would I see it?
Sorry?
Where would I see it?
On the internet.
Oh, right. I could download it somehow.
I think you probably could. Look, where did I see it? I saw it, I think I was staying at my sister's in Sydney, and she has Foxtel.
Right.
So I think she got it off Foxtel. Yeah.
You starting to get worried by Donald Trump?
Personally, I'm not yet worried. I'm not yet panic-stricken. Mm-hmm. But he's looking increasingly like he might be in with a shot.
Mm.
Do you get that feeling?
I do.
Because Hillary Clinton, just her credibility is pretty badly damaged. And I think when it comes to people saying, you know, Crooked Hillary, as Dahl loves to call her, Crooked Hillary. And she's, look, you know, I don't think she's the most evil person on the planet, but she has her flaws, to be sure.
Mm.
And her problem with truthful accounts of her life is one of them.
Mm.
Truthful accounts of what she's done in her career. She seems a little bit loose with the truth sometimes. And that's a big problem for credibility, isn't it? Let's face it.
I just think she's only just one scandal away from losing, you know, just some scandal of some sort.
Yeah.
And in a two-horse race, if one horse falls over,
there's only one left.
Yeah.
And that's the Donald.
Well, the guy who co-authored his book, The Art of the Deal, is a guy called Tony Schwartz.
Mm.
And he's revealed a deep sense of remorse for portraying the mogul in a positive light. Because he thinks that a Trump presidency may lead to the end of civilization.
Yeah.
And he spoke about the 18 months he spent working with Donald Trump and described what he's done as, I've put lipstick on a pig, he said. And it won't surprise you, he said that discussion was consistently hobbled due to Trump's short attention span, with Trump fidgeting until he ultimately called off the session. It's impossible to keep him focused on any topic other than his own self-aggrandizement for more than a few minutes, Schwartz said. If he had to be briefed on a crisis in the Situation Room, it's impossible to imagine him paying attention over a long period of time.
Yeah, and look, what's worse is that they've had presidents before who relied on the expertise of the people around them. George W. Bush, for one.
Ronald Reagan,
for another. Now, if he chose to go down that path, well, you know, his assistants, you know, the people around him, his cabinet, might somehow muddle through. But he is such a volatile person temperamentally.
Mm.
You know, what people are saying is he's temperamentally unfit for the office. I have to agree 100%, and that guy made that point pretty well, didn't he?
Mm.
Did you also see the article by Noam Chomsky on Donald Trump?
I don't think so.
Oh, sorry, I should have sent you the link, but I put it up myself on my Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a huge fan of Chomsky, but he has his.
Isn't he the character who's always talking very nebulously about the spirit and has?
No. He's an old lefty from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
Right.
He was interestingly a specialist in linguistics.
Right.
In his early career, but I think as he put it, the reason he got so heavily or so deeply into politics is because he just couldn't not get involved. You know, people like us.
When you're interested
and you see how vitally connected politics is with our real day-to-day lives and how it affects us, you can't not be interested. And Chomsky got into politics, I think, for similar reasons. He's a highly respected scholar in linguistics. He's a bit... how should I put it? He doesn't like Sam Harris.
Right.
I think Sam Harris is one of the most articulate, clear-thinking people out there myself.
Mm.
But Sam Harris invited him to have a discussion with him one time, and it went very, very badly. Sam Harris kept trying to keep it friendly and keep it on a particular path. Chomsky didn't want to be there and kept finding fault with Harris.
And Sam Harris is so analytical in his thinking that not many people can follow the pathways
he
takes and aren't willing to stay on the track because they're not used to it. So
yeah.
Yeah,
but I think Chomsky disagrees with Harris on the threat of religion,
right?
And I think Chomsky is an atheist. He's a from a Jewish background, but I think he's basically an atheist. But he doesn't go along with the line, I don't think.
So did he have something to say to Trump about Trump?
Yes,
right.
He said a Trump presidency could well be the end of human civilization, basically.
Yeah. Well. Essential Report polled.
I could have cut that a lot shorter, couldn't I? About Chomsky. Sorry about running at the mouth a bit.
No, that's all right. Essential Report polled Australians about various things as they do. Currently, they have Labor on 52% and Liberals on 48%. So that's an improvement for Labor. But on other issues, they asked if Hillary Clinton was elected president. Do you think Australia's relationship with the United States would become better or worse? And 24% it would be better, 13% said it would be worse, and 54% said it would make no difference. So that's if Hillary Clinton was elected, and then the same people were asked, 12 million, if Donald Trump was elected president, do you think Australia's relationship with the United States would become better or worse? And 7% thought it would get better. 63% said worse. And 9% said don't know.
Yeah.
Who are these 7%?
It's a stark difference, isn't it?
Mm. So I think Australia's got Donald Trump pegged. Goodness me.
I think Bill Shorten came out and criticised him, didn't he, during the election campaign?
Well, you'd be on safe ground, wouldn't you? I mean, you wouldn't come out and support him, would you, if you're trying to get votes?
But other candidates, I think, generally shy away from criticising political candidates in other countries, particularly countries that are so important to us.
Yeah, and where the candidate might eventually be the president. Yeah.
Exactly. But I don't think George W. Bush was particularly popular with a lot of Aussies either early in his presidency. But
no, you're right. As a mark of respect, they normally wouldn't commentate. But goodness me, when it comes to Donald Trump, all the rules are thrown out the window.
That's the danger with Trump, isn't it? People are worried that he will just throw treaty after treaty out the window. He's even threatened to withdraw from NATO if the other NATO countries don't pull their weight in terms of paying for stuff.
See, NATO is a bit of a flawed system, though. I was listening to Dan Carlin on NATO, because you've got a lot of very minor countries signed up. And the idea of NATO is if one country is invaded, we're all in the battle.
And you know who else is part of NATO now, don't you? Well, the Baltic states.
Yes.
Or at least some of them. I'm not sure if it's all of them, but is it Estonia or Lithuania? I forget
could
now.
Be.
At least one of them is a member of NATO.
There's some tiny countries in there.
And it has a substantial ethnic Russian resident population.
Yep.
It has been occupied by, you know, the Russians in the form of the Soviet Union for, what, since when? I don't remember when they invaded, but it was in the early 20th century sometime, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So they've got a lot of, you know, Russians very, very close to them, all around them. Now, if Russia invaded that country, NATO would be obliged to respond.
Yes. It's a dangerous situation, the NATO agreement.
But you know, I mean, if we're going to stand on principle, I think you would have to say that if countries want to join NATO and be part of that nominal protection, why not? Why not admit them? Because we do stand for freedom, don't we?
We do. We do, but, you know, should Australia be part of NATO?
Good question.
Like,
are we part?
Like,
do we draw the line? Atlantic?
Should New Zealand be part of NATO then? Like, if a peaceful country is invaded, we should all be in. Like, at what point do you...
Well, we did in the First World War, didn't we?
Yeah.
We went off to fight in Europe.
But presumably we made the decision that, okay, circumstances are such that we will enter this. Whereas under NATO, your borders transgressed, we're in. Like, we don't have to think about it. We're just automatically in. Mm. So... Yeah.
So what do you think? Should we join?
Well, I'm not saying... no, we shouldn't join.
I don't think you would.
But you would hope that just common sense, based on what's happened at the time, would be enough.
Ukraine was interesting too, wasn't it? Because Ukraine has long been wanting to join, but has been wanting to join the European Union and NATO, I think.
Right, yeah.
And I think the Americans have been actively courting Ukraine.
Right.
Because it's, of course, you know, anything that is a counter to the Russian influence is good for the Americans, I suppose, and the Western Europeans in their eyes.
Don't know. I assume. Don't know.
And that was pretty edgy stuff, wasn't it? When we know there were Russian soldiers and arms directly involved in that conflict in the Ukraine.
It gets very tricky as well because so many Russian speakers and they're getting news reports from Russia that are just propaganda. So the local population was turned to the Russian side in many respects due to propaganda.
Surely.
Tricky. Very tricky.
Very messy situation. Mm. Yeah.
If only we were an island tucked away on our own. Oh, we are. More or less. There you go. Things are looking bad. It could be worse. Hillsong Church, brief article, racked up $100 million a year, tax-free income.
They're doing very nicely.
They are. And it's just... have you ever been to one?
I have been, I believe. Have I been inside the one in Brisbane, which used to be called the Garden City Christian Church?
Mm.
I have a feeling I went to a wedding there once, more than 20 years ago. I had a university friend who I think got married there, and I think I was invited to the wedding and attended the wedding in that church. It was prior to being joining the Hillsong family, if you like.
Right.
But it was very much along the same lines in terms of theology.
Right, yeah.
It was a Pentecostalist church.
Right, with a good dash of entertainment thrown in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we should go one day.
We should.
I don't know when my wife's got something on.
They'll be waiting for us now at the door.
We should go as a little excursion. I think it'd be fascinating. I think it'd be really fascinating.
I think so
we need to go. Marriage equality plebiscite. Discussions taking place as to whether we should have one or whether we should just cast a vote in Parliament. And Scott and I discussed this back in March, and at the time, 66% of people thought it should be decided by a plebiscite. But a new poll has come out that says that only 48% think that now. They think the Parliament should do it. And then those people, so 48% said were in favour of the plebiscite. When they were told that the plebiscite would not be binding and that politicians would still have a vote, support for the plebiscite fell to 33%. And then, the same group, when they told them that the plebiscite is going to cost $160 million...
or more.
The support dropped to 25%.
Unsurprising.
Yeah. So, so that's on the plebiscite. And at the same time, we've got the Australian Christian Lobby, first mentioned tonight. They're saying that they want some funding to make their case from the government.
Seriously? They yes. want funding to yes. campaign against the yes vote, to campaign for the no vote, right?
Correct. Because they are saying that this is like the Republic referendum, and on that, the government provided money for each side of the argument, $4.5 million. So they're saying, well, this issue is actually bigger than the Republic yeah. because this deals with families
right.
and the definition of marriage mm. and kids not having a mummy and a daddy.
Yeah.
And so much more important than our head of state. So they, they're saying, well, it should be like the Republican referendum, and the government should be providing funds to well-known groups on both sides of the argument.
Yeah, and who's more well-known?
Hmm. In that last time they gave $7.5 million to each of the yes and no proponents for the referendum, and Lyle Shelton thinks that that amount increased with inflation is what should be offered to the proponents of the various side. What a mess.
You can't really blame him for trying. I mean, he's doing his job, isn't he? But his reasoning is a little bit questionable.
He's doing his job. We mentioned some facts last week about, because we're talking about France and the, you know, it's surprising that there's not more terrorist activity given the attitudes of people when they're surveyed by Pew.
Yeah, the results of research. Pew research are quite disturbing. Mm.
So I've started subscribing to the Jewish press.
Jews News?
Jews News, yeah. And they've sort of rifled through some other Pew Research statistics, so I'll run through a few. 71 to 91% of Muslims in Iraq, Palestine territories, Morocco, Egypt, Jordan, Pakistan support making Sharia the official law of the land. And of those, 66 to 92% favour the death penalty for persons who convert from Islam to another religion. That's an awful lot of people thinking you should be killed for converting. We spoke about the honour killing last week. Of that Pakistani woman who was their version of yeah. Kim Kardashian.
And look, you know, from the reports we see in the press, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of honour killings in Pakistan every year.
Mm.
It's at least in the hundreds. And most people only sit up and take notice when it's someone like her who's affluent, somewhat famous, because she put herself out there, didn't she?
She did, yeah.
And she must have known she was skating on thin ice.
Mm.
Because anyone in Pakistan who does that, what she did,
yeah.
so openly, is skating on thin ice.
She had asked for some police protection, but I think that was against strangers. Like, you can't even say for your own brother, for goodness sake.
Her brother killed.
The one that she was supporting. Like, she was earning all the money for the family and supporting the family. Anyway, 2013 Pew survey found that low percentages in these Middle Eastern countries, somewhere in the 22 to 45%, said that honour killings are never justified. So they've asked people, And only 22% to 45% say never justified. Mm. That means a lot of people are saying sometimes, rarely, or often justified. Mm. Huge numbers.
And look, we can't say that this is purely an Islamic problem either, because it seems to be a Middle Eastern problem more than anything. Is that your take on this? Because I've come across references to the Yazidi people practicing honor killing.
Yeah.
And even someone suggested to me Middle Eastern Christians might practice it on occasion too.
Right.
So it's not strictly speaking a Muslim problem.
No, it's not. Yeah.
It seems to be a sort of tribalistic, you know, control of females type practice.
Hmm. But when you've got a misogynistic religion that's deeply embedded, just it certainly certainly adds fuel to the fire.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that's where we come down on it in with regard to Islam.
Mm. So there were some disturbing statistics from that one. Are you enjoying the show and would you like to help out? There's a few easy things you can do. You can like us on Facebook and you can go onto iTunes and leave a positive review. That would be much appreciated. Also, if you're really keen, you could donate to us via Patreon. For details on how to do all this, visit our website. Thanks for your support. And now, back to the podcast. I mean, on this podcast, 12th Man, we like to crisscross around the globe, and we're in Gibraltar now. A court in Gibraltar ruled that a Catholic mother couldn't baptise the son without the atheist father's approval.
Seems fair to me.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. So, Roman Catholic mother, atheist father, they've split up. They've agreed to expose the child to their respective beliefs and leave it at that. Father discovers that the mother had arranged for the kid to be baptised, so he's had to go to court to stop that happening. And the judge said, and when he talks about C, that's the child, the father has the legitimate view that whilst he would not stand in the way of child C's involvement and participation in the Christianity practiced by the mother and her family, the child should not feel when he comes to make his decisions that they have already been made for him. He will be less open to alternatives, including his father's opinions. He might feel that having been baptized, he would be rejecting the faith chosen for him rather than simply choosing not to follow his maternal family's lead. It's quite true. I mean, it happens all the time. Kids are christened, baptized, confirmed, all before they've got the chance to think about it. And
not to mention circumcised.
Yeah, and you're in. So it's in them, you know, you've got to opt out.
The judge sounds eminently sensible and reasonable to me.
He does. So
there's one for reasonableness.
Yeah, I mean, we've had to cross off a few countries on this podcast between Scott and I where we just can no longer go. And but Gibraltar stays on the list.
They won't let you in anymore.
Based on that, that was pretty good. So,
perhaps we could set up a branch of the secular party in Gibraltar.
Perhaps. Yeah. We'll have to look into it. Yeah. But membership might be bigger than what we've got here. Wouldn't be that hard. Oh, guns, 12th Man.
Again.
This article makes the point that at one level, it's easier to buy a gun in California than it is to buy a Big Mac at McDonald's. And the reason is that in California, there are 1,165 McDonald's restaurants. But if you want to buy a gun, you've got a choice of 2,900 establishments.
Gun shops?
Yes.
Wow.
Or places to buy a gun.
Wow. That's staggering.
Isn't that extraordinary? There's nearly three times as many places to buy a gun.
That's extraordinary.
As there are McDonald's stores.
Oh. How many gun shops have you ever noticed in Australia, Trevor?
Well, I used to pass one all the time on Waterworks Road. Mm-hmm. That was the only...
And there's one in Wellington Road, Woolloongabba.
Right. Yeah.
And I saw one the other day. I forget where I was now.
Mm.
That's about three I've, you know, two or three I've ever noticed.
Yeah. 2,900. What a number. Yeah. Anyway, this was actually a right-wing article saying, because they're saying, well, it's not easier to buy a gun because you have to have a waiting period and you have to register the weapon, yeah, and you have to be over a certain age and blah, blah, blah. So
stop all these freaking rules.
So yeah, that's it. So stop exaggerating the problem. But that was the tone of the article. But the bit I've pulled out of it just fascinated me, that there were so many licensed gun dealers. Yeah, that is
truly staggering.
Mm. Yes.
But look, the Burger King, I think, is filling the void a little bit, aren't they? And KFC. So they might balance things out a bit.
Yeah, well...
So if you're after junk food rather than a gun, I don't think you'll be too disappointed in California.
Well, the opportunities will be there. I think you'll still be disappointed when you get your hands on some, but...
Especially, you know, 10 minutes after you finish your meal, you feel like putting your fingers down your throat.
Yeah, that's it. Now, 12th Man, you put me on to Sam Harris, actually.
Did I really?
Yeah, you did. Yeah, I didn't really listen to him much before. But
he's terrific, isn't he?
He is very, very analytical. Clear.
He's just so clear. Yes. And he has a special ability to pull the pieces together in a very coherent manner.
Yes. And he's quite brave to come out with statements just based on, well...
He has guns.
If you say this and this and this, then the result is this, even though it might be quite shocking. Yeah. So he had things to say about profiling of people, which really makes people uncomfortable.
And led to accusations of racism against him.
Yes. Unfairly.
Unfairly, I think.
Mm. Yeah. So in this article, he's making the point that the more religious a society is, the more problems it has. A little bit lengthy, this quote, but let's go for it anyway because it's worthwhile. Norway, Iceland, Australia, Canada, Sweden, Switzerland, Belgium, Japan, the Netherlands, Denmark, United Kingdom are among the least religious societies on Earth, and they're also the healthiest, as measured by life expectancy, adult literacy, per capita income, educational attainment, gender equality, homicide rate, and infant mortality. Conversely, 50 nations ranked lowest in terms of human development are unwaveringly religious. The United States is unique among wealthy democracies in its level of religious literalism in opposition to evolutionary theory. It is also uniquely beleaguered by high rates of homicide, abortion, teen pregnancy, STD infection, and infant mortality. The same comparison holds true within the United States itself. Southern and Midwestern states, characterized by the high levels of religious superstition and hostility to evolutionary theory, are especially plagued by the above indicators of social dysfunction, while the northern states, which are more secular, are more like the European norms. Really well said by Sam Harris. Goes on more stuff along that line if you're interested. But
And he's been saying that for a while, actually. And he makes a very strong point, I think, in that regard.
So it just gets to me when people say, oh, at least religions are fairly benign and they give us some moral guidance and they're not so bad. And
people say that to me too. They say, Paul, why are you so down on religion? Leave it alone. It doesn't hurt anyone. And I'm like, are you for real? It doesn't hurt anyone?
Well, people don't know.
Yeah, and I guess some people just don't want to know. They're not interested enough to delve into the actual facts of the matter.
That's our challenge over the next 3 years, 12 Man, is to educate the public.
Let's do that.
What's going on, yes. Let's do that.
You reckon 3 years is enough? Did you say three?
Well, that's our challenge over the next three. I didn't say we're going to stop.
Okay.
Yeah. Queensland government is going to bring in new rules in relation to electoral donations.
Are they?
Political donations, where it's going to be in real time. So people donate $10,000, then immediately it will be on a register and people will be able to know. It's incredible that we don't do it already.
Isn't it?
You know, you can go to an election, be voting for a crowd, and have no idea that 6 months previously, some huge donation was made by some group.
And what do you think about public funding of elections?
I'm fine with anything that takes the private funding out. So,
and takes the unfair advantage that the people with the most money have.
Indeed.
Out of it.
It's dangerous when
look at America. America's a perfect example of how money distorts democracy.
So no, I'm in favour of anything that reduces the ability of just money to decide power.
And let's face it, in the, you know, the contest between Clinton and Sanders, money was a big factor. Although Sanders was very successful in raising money, but Hillary, still has the backing of a lot of very wealthy people and companies, doesn't she? Not to mention the Democratic Party core members.
Right.
You know, the so-called superdelegates.
Yeah.
Now, what's that about? I can't pretend to really understand how it's structured, but I gather there are people within the Democratic Party who have special privileges.
Yes.
And can virtually outvote
almost
the common members of the party.
Yes.
Who vote for candidates.
Yeah. I don't know how that works either.
We must look into that.
There's a project for us to examine the...
Yeah,
well, just sorting out the Australian Senate voting system and the way the preferences flowed, that was a worthwhile exercise. Yeah. I think we could do the same. I'm not sure if it was just earlier on before the podcast or during it, but I had a bit of a whinge about Q&A with you, and God, that show just grinds my gears. And when there was Pauline Hanson on the show, there was a Muslim character, Khaled Olimar, challenged Pauline Hanson about her policies towards the Muslims, and I remember him speaking about
he was in the audience,
and he said, you know, what would you know, what can I tell my son about the way he very much referred to his son a couple of times, I thought, in it, and you know, basically painted himself as, I am this reasonable Muslim, what do I tell my reasonable son about your unreasonable views? Turns out he's not reasonable at all. He's got a really wicked and evil, spiteful, nasty Facebook page.
Interesting.
I didn't look him up. The Guardian did.
Well done, Guardian, for a change.
In it, he targeted Tasmanian Senator Jackie Lambie and referred to her as ugly, stupid, and a deformed creature.
Wow.
How reasonable
is that?
He made references to the Zionists and capitalists of the world. Go fuck yourself. And
seriously.
And the world is waking up to the crimes of Zionism, capitalism.
Look, when you hear Muslims talking about Zionism, you know that there's something there, don't you?
So
they're not Jewish people, they're Zionists.
Yes.
It's almost like Nazis, isn't it, for Muslims? And probably worse.
It's a flawed program. Like, people who you just don't know can come out and say something like that, and I'm very reasonable, here's a motherhood statement, you should agree with me. And in fact, you're potentially quite a nasty person. And
well, he was quite effective with his propaganda then, if that's the case, if that's his background. Yeah, he doesn't sound like a very nice person, judging by the comments on his Facebook page.
No.
I mean, I think I like Q&A, I have to say, because I like to hear a diversity of opinions. And I like to hear people discussing hard topics,
They're hard topics, but nobody ever addresses the hard... solution.
No, they do occasionally have some very clear-thinking people on the program. Doesn't happen that often, but sometimes I turn the TV off after watching, feeling, yeah, that was a good one.
Right.
It didn't happen this week so much, but for other reasons. Look, on that note, Ed Husic on Monday explained his reasons for taking the oath of office as an MP on the Quran. And he basically said it hadn't occurred to him to do it until somebody, I guess a friend or somebody in his circle, suggested to him it would be a good symbolic act. And so that's why he did it, as a kind of symbolic statement of his membership of the Australian Muslim community.
So he's not Muslim?
He doesn't come across as a pious Muslim, if I can put it like that. He's fairly secular. I think I may have it wrong, but I recall some time back hearing that his family background was perhaps Bosnian Muslim.
Right.
I'm not sure.
Okay. Yep.
But Bosnian Muslims are known as fairly relatively secular in their practice of Islam on the whole.
Mm. No, I didn't hear that.
Yeah. But anyway, that's Ed Husic's reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, personally, you know, I mean, being an atheist, of course, I would have rejected all the old scripture books. But then, you know, I'm not an MP, so I won't get that opportunity.
Mm.
How about you, Trevor, when you become senator? What are you going to swear on?
Well, it'll be an affirmation of some sort, I guess. Yeah. It's a long way off. I've got time to think about it.
It might be closer than you think. You know, politics in Australia is in flux, I think, a little bit. Don't you get that feeling? Not really.
No, not really. No. Last week, we finished off. We had been speaking about the terrorist activities in France. Been another one since where priest was killed in his church, just executed in front of people. Just horrible.
Yeah.
But also, there's been a lot in Germany. There's been 4 incidents in virtually the last week, one of which was not seemingly terrorist related. That was the guy who just wanted to kill some people and hacked a girl's Facebook, invited her friends to a place for offering to buy food, and when they rocked up, just started killing them. So it didn't seem to be ISIS or terrorist related. But in Ansbach, there was a Syrian suicide bomber, injured 15 people, and they found a video of him pledging allegiance to ISIS. Yeah. In Würzburg, an immigrant teen inspired by ISIS stabbed passengers on a train. Yeah.
And they were Chinese, I believe, the passengers he stabbed. Yeah.
And in Rulingen, a Syrian asylum seeker killed a woman using a machete. And that's all in the last 7 to 10 days in Germany.
And, you know, I've read some reports of rapes by what appeared to be foreign men, both young women and girls in Germany.
Because last week we made the point that they're having their fair share in France, and sort of Germany seemed to have escaped. But a week later we can rattle off 3 pretty terrible incidents. So last week, 12th Man, we finished off with the French national anthem, and tonight we will finish off with the German national anthem. And look, dear listener, unfortunate about the French one, I listened to the podcast the next day to critique my performance and Scott's, and I'll listen to the whole French national anthem. I think it's great.
Oh, really?
I won't be disappointed if you get a little way into the German national anthem and decide you've had enough. But anything else on your little list there I'm looking at?
No, I'm done.
You're done? All right, dear listener. That's us for episode 55. Scott, I think, will be back next week. The 12th man will chip in as required when one of us needs a break.
Always on call.
Thank you once again, Paul.
My absolute pleasure, Trevor. And thank you, listeners.
And enjoy the tune of the German national anthem for about as long as you can take. Bye.
See ya.
Well, dear listener, did you enjoy that episode of the podcast? If you did, I've got a favour to ask. First up, tell some friends. Let them know about the podcast. You'll be discussing something at some time, and you might be repeating something I've said. And when you're talking to your friends, say, hey, I heard this on this podcast, and it's worth listening to. And maybe pick an episode that you think's a good one and direct them to it. Like, grab their phone and go to their podcast app and search for Iron Fist Velvet Glove and subscribe on their behalf on their phone and just put the word out. The other thing is you could become a patron and support the show. So if you go to our website, you'll see a link to Patreon, and there are some different options for subscribing and paying per episode. And really, the amount that you pay depends on what you get from the podcast. So there's different levels ranging from $1.50 Australian to, I think, $10 and various ones in between. It's really, what do you think it's worth? Is it worth a cup of coffee? Is it worth more than that, less than that? Whatever you get out of it, because not everybody gets the same. Maybe you don't listen to the whole thing. Maybe you never talk about it with people. Maybe you really couldn't care less half the time whether the podcast is there. It just, it'll be different for everybody. So if you get a lot out of the podcast, contribute a bit more. If you don't get much, contribute less. But in any event, you can subscribe there. If you don't like the idea of a regular subscription, the website has a link to a PayPal donation. So you could just do a one-off donation every now and again. So there you go. It'd be good to spread the word, get a few more listeners, and that way, look, if we ended up getting more listeners and more money, we could do maybe a second episode or more special episodes, provide some more content. So it's up to you. If you think it's worthwhile, let people know. Thanks.